The 49th year after Aegon's conquest gave the people of Westeros a welcome respite from the chaos and conflict that had gone before. It would be a year of peace, plenty, and marriage. Remembered in the annals of the Seven Kingdoms as the year of the three brides.
This one was really fun. I feel like we got a lot of political intrigue with the backdrop of
political
wedding vibes. Okay. With wedding vibes, what's more fun than that?
It's the 49th year after Aegon's conquest. We've come a long way. Some of these people were around when we just started and they were kids. A lot of these people weren't even born. We're now at a place where when Jaehaerys and Alysanne fly in on their dragons, it's not something where the realm's like, I've never seen something like this before. It's, oh, it reminds me of that one time back in the day.
Right.
But it's 49 years. I'm trying to think of what's happened to us 50 years ago. So it's 2022 right now. 50 years ago, it was the 70s. And so if I consult to Mad Men, around that time.
You and your age, your 50 years of age that you've lived.
Apparently nothing has ever been this fun in Westeros, ever. 40,000 people for a wedding that wasn't even for a king or a queen.
Right.
Rogar. You've done well for yourself, sir.
He really has.
Rogar, the 32-year-old husband of Alyssa, who has done her share of cool things so far in the story. Most importantly now, being the one responsible for bringing in the best people we've seen ever that we're supposed to worship.
So far, at least. Right.
I personally worship Jaehaerys and Alysanne. Okay. I do.
Okay. Do you really?
I personally worship both of them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I worship both of them, and I also worship the person I'm supposed to worship, the other person
Alysanne?
From this chapter. No.
Alysanne?
No, you're close. The mystery knight.
Right, okay, well, there you
How
go.
How could you miss it?
I didn't miss it.
That's supposed to be the thing that we like the most.
Oh, really?
Yes.
The big reveal?
Well, it's more of like an Easter egg, I think. I don't think it's supposed to be a big reveal. I think it's supposed to be something that we go, oh. I felt that way about a lot of stuff in this chapter, though. I did. I really like this one.
The slender mystery knight, known only as the Serpent in Scarlet, also had a great following.
Dark.
When finally defeated and unmasked, quote-unquote, he proved to be a woman, Jonquil Dark, the bastard daughter of Lord of Duskendale.
Get out of here. So, in World of Warcraft, there's a place called Duskendale.
Is there really?
No.
Oh.
No.
Dang.
What is it? Oh, my phone's on airplane mode. I can't look it up. I forget. I believe it's something like Duskendale. I know it is because I had to go there to tame a direwolf.
Ooh, okay.
Funny enough. It's not Duskendale. Someone's yelling at me somewhere.
Yeah, because I truly can't help you on this one.
It's not Duskendale, but it's the same energy. And there's really spooky music, and there's a glade where there's really moody-looking trees, and they have direwolves. Like, there's wolves in the game, but these are specifically direwolves. And so that's the thing I wanted to catch for obvious reasons. So I caught that thing, and there was spooky music, and that's the whole vibe of Jonquil Dark up till this point. So this is our first little taste so far. There's going to be more, but that's, you know, I finally have a sexuality now.
Right.
Wait, that's too obvious because it's a girl.
No, that's true. Well, a powerful
I'm
girl.
I'm still working on
that's
it.
True.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it, but I think that that's a pretty good way to pick the Kingsguard.
It is such a fun way to pick the Kingguards. Pick the Kingsguard. The one thing I kind of felt a little sad that none of the crowd faves got picked at first. The keg
ale.
Keg ale.
All hail the keg ale.
The drunken knight. mm-hmm. the Serpent and Scarlet, because I love the energy of everybody getting really psyched about these randos, you know? Mm-hmm. But then I felt less sad about it when they finished talking about his Kingsguard. And I want to read what how they describe his Kingsguard. After all the fighting is finished and they pick the ones, mm-hmm. the guys, it says, Jaehaerys the Conciliator would sit the Iron Throne for 55 years, and many a knight would wear a white cloak in his service during the long reign, more than any other monarch could boast. But it was rightly said that never did any Targaryen possess a Kingsguard who could equal the Boy King's first seven.
The guy with fun. The spear.
Right, who's so good.
Yeah. I forget his name. What was his name? I think his name was Peter Piper, right?
I think it was Johnny Appleseed.
I'm pretty sure it was Peter Piper. Dude, I can't. I need my length.
You were close. It was Pate the Woodcock.
There we go.
Peter Piper, Pate, same thing. Fought with a spear instead of a sword. And some question whether he was a knight at all, but proved himself proved so skillful with his chosen weapon that Sir Joffrey Doggett settled the matter by dubbing the lad himself with hundreds cheered.
Sir William Stafford, a short, stout, big-bellied man who always appeared so intoxicated that it was a wonder he could stand, let alone fight. The commons named him the Keg of Ale and sang, Hail, hail, Keg of Ale, whenever he took the field.
Can you imagine? Think about the way they set the scene of this whole wedding.
Yeah.
The vibes are so high. Everybody's there. It's been a long time since anyone's really had anything to truly be excited about. And they went all in on the festivities. The wedding's already happened at this point. So people are already high off of the good times. And then they have this tournament. What a brilliant idea to just get everybody's buy-in, because everyone's having such a good time and things are finally low-key enough that everybody can let loose all together. So smart and so fun.
Yeah. And it's like we've been saying, anything after Maegor is a relief. So we're all relieved and we're all really happy. And the Lickspittle, the new High Septon, is like, literally, if you guys want to marry your brother, if you want to marry your kid, if you want to marry your dog, if you want to marry, it doesn't matter at this point. At this point, let's just go with it.
Right.
And everyone visited. Everyone.
40,000 of them. Or was it just 40,000 of the small folk that came and then all of the great houses?
But there's not anything else to do. And there's probably a lot of free food to some degree. At least there's stuff to look at. Like, if you're looking to have an activity, then something that has this much pageantry but this much opportunity as well, it's like there's a little bit of something for everyone. So it makes a lot of sense. It's just, it's like I said, something like this happening for Rogar and Alyssa is so specific. It's just like the only way that it could be so positive for everyone is if someone took a hit somewhere. At least it seems that way. Like, if there was a balance to all of the good, and the balance is in the case of Jaehaerys the king not having so much pride that his wedding had to be the best,
right,
to this degree.
Right.
It's funny that Rhaena decided to get married to Andrew Farman the way that she did.
It's interesting, and I feel like when I was saying at the beginning about political intrigue, it's just interesting because I feel like weddings or like big family events highlight so brightly cracks in the walls. And so kind of the way she got married, really? Her mom's reaction just kind of made me, and I don't know anything. I mean, I can't remember a lot. So I'm interested to kind of see where those relationships go, because it seemed to me like she got married quickly to somebody that people wouldn't really have picked for her. And the crown is upset and her mom's kind of hurt. And then she doesn't come to these weddings. And so the rift is just a major rift there. Like, she's really separated herself, you know?
Yeah.
But her man loves her, so.
I mean, her boy loves her.
Yeah, true.
So Rhaena is on Fair Isle and had been following a lot of the stuff that was not fun. And it's a good, it's like, it's one of the furthest places that you can be.
Right.
And it's like convenient because she is able to fly a dragon. And so marrying the son of the lord of the area, I guess it could be a strategic move, but at that point, maybe it was an actual decision, like one that wasn't strategically based. But when we're dealing with Targaryens, for me, it's hard to take seriously. And there's also so much, there's so many rumors around her and mm-hmm. her role in Maegor's death and what she's able to do mysteriously. I don't have an answer for it. I don't know if anyone really does, but I don't think it really matters. I think it's mostly about what you said, the fact that there are cracks that are made, and so people are going to start asking questions. I never thought about it like that, though. So you're saying that weddings specifically, or did you say weddings and family events?
I was saying big family events. I just feel like tend to hold a lot of importance, and so, I don't know, in my mind.
I've never thought about that.
Really?
Yeah.
In my mind, if my sister, or if my mom, wait, my daughter, sorry, let me go through every relationship. If my daughter didn't invite me to her wedding, wouldn't that be a massive red flag? I just feel like this is just an opportunity to highlight a rift. And like you said, whether it was strategic on Rhaena's end or just purely out of passion, you know, hard to say. But regardless, I think that the fallout was pretty clear.
Yeah, but nothing really happened. It's just
not yet.
It's just, okay, yeah. It's just that there's opportunity. Well, we have to pretend, at least for the scope of the conversation, that this is the only thing that exists.
Well, you remember the other day, you said you remembered how everybody was related to each other. And that's a pretty big feat.
Yeah, no, it's not just that. This is probably the first chapter I've read of Fire and Blood so far where I felt like I had really even footing. So 49 years into after Aegon's conquest, so 49 years into Aegon's handiwork, I'm like, ah, okay, things finally feel settled. And I think that that's pretty much the energy that I'm getting from this chapter. Of course, with Jaehaerys and Alysanne kind of biting their lips, holding their tongue, and allowing their pride to sort of be stomped on. If they had that pride, watching other people rule the kingdom, watching other people celebrate to such a high degree, that foundation, I don't think had any, it wasn't close to being like this yet. But maybe it was. Maybe we're just getting a way too specifically biased account from the way that the book was written. It's hard for me to say because of Septon Barth or Archmaester Gul'dane, the people who are, that George is like pinning his information through in this case. Mm-hmm. It's like maybe they were biased. I know there was time where Aenys was doing his thing. So it's tough to say. And also, Aegon ruled for a really long time. So maybe they had really firm and calm and fun times where the Starks came all the way down from the north and brought some of their bannermen for other things, but we haven't heard about them yet.
We got such a brief snapshot of everybody else leading up to this, and now we've really get to sink our teeth into Jaehaerys's whole
Speaking
thing.
Of that, I felt like we should be eating cake or candy or something for recording this episode. Because there's three weddings. Whenever I read that they were holding the main ceremony of Rhaegar and Alyssa in the mostly finished dragon pit, and that tens of thousands of people came to their wedding, my first thought was, come on.
Really?
Well, you're just going to say tens of thousands of people showed up. It seemed like one of those things that the author, in this case, Gul'dane, is just sort of throwing down on the page. Again, this is like the same energy of not really buying into Jaehaerys and the whole, I don't know, like new, the dominion of the new vibe and how overtly positive it is. But then we get more information. We get a more specific number. And I don't know why knowing that it was 40,000 made me feel better, but it did. Knowing it wasn't just tens of thousands of people were standing on the rim of the top of the dragon pit, looking down and cheering and throwing bouquets of flowers and golden confetti onto the golden wedding.
That's fair. But I think that we're supposed to highlight the fact that this is the thing, and everybody, pretty much everybody who was anybody, was there and participating, was the excited.
The Tyrosh.
You know, so even if the numbers feel inflated or the whole thing feels a little extra, I think that people walked away from this feeling like they were part of something that they cared about. I liked the part where they were talking about how Jaehaerys met with over 100 people, and he kind of sat with each of them and looked them in the eye, basically. And
in his private
in his private chambers.
What was his like solar, that kind of energy?
I can't remember specifically.
Not in the throne room. The point is, he wasn't sitting on the throne and trying to intimidate people.
Right. He was just trying to ask questions, and he was just trying to understand kind of what was going on. They talk about it as these intimate meetings with the boy king. And then we get Allison playing host and doing all the lunches and
the girl stuff.
The girl stuff. And then we get, obviously, Rogar and Alyssa doing their thing too. But I feel like a lot of people kind of came.
And Rogar's thing was just buying prostitutes for people and then showing them how it's done.
But not even be able to get through all of them.
That's true.
Come on, brother, it's your wedding.
Yeah, honestly, man, what? I guess he had a lot of alcohol in his defense.
It's a disappointment, but
yeah.
No, either way.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Either way. Oh, the mock sea battle in Blackwater Bay?
Dude,
how
all
we
of
forget
it.
About
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I know. We should talk about the scale of it. Just the scale in general was, like I said, at first, I was like, come on. But then I kept reading it, and I was like, okay. No wedding half so magnificent had been celebrated in Westeros in living memory, and lords great and small from throughout the Seven Kingdoms and beyond gathered to be a part of it. Donal Hightower came up from Old Town with 100 knights and 77 of the most devout, 77, escorting his High Holiness and the High Septon, whilst Lyman Lannister brought 300 knights from Casterly Rock. Brandon Stark, the ailing Lord of Winterfell, made the long journey down from the north with his sons Walton and Alaric, shout out Alaric, attended by a dozen fierce northern bannermen and 30 sworn brothers of the Night's Watch. So we've got a selection of those guys as well. Lords Arryn, Corbray, and Royce represented the Vale. Lords Selmy, Don Darren, and Tarly, the Dornish Marches. Even from beyond the borders of the realm, the great and mighty came, the Prince of Dorns and his sister, the Sea Lord of Braavos, a son, the Archon of Tyrosh, crossed the narrow sea himself with his maiden daughter, as did no fewer than 22 magisters from the free city of Pentos. And yet none of the 13 of Carth. The celebrations would include a great tourney, 7 days of feasts and frolics, and even a mock sea battle to be fought in the waters of Blackwater Bay. Rhaenyra didn't come, but that's okay. Well, it didn't seem to be that important to people.
It wasn't mentioned specifically.
Yeah, just beforehand. That's funny, but it's before when they were trying to, I guess, when new leadership took over, that was one of the first things that the maesters from other places noticed whenever they were making their tour. They were like, oh, some of these Targaryens are a little unsettled. They don't seem to be as socially fluid with the rest of their family as they could be. But that wasn't really important right now. So it's like nothing really matters.
Well, I think that another thing I was thinking about is King's Landing is pretty newly built up pretty much at this point. So there's just a lot of stuff to look at, you know? Where are you? Before, they were kind of parading around to city to city. And so all eyes are on them very specifically, like this really small way. But now they're inviting everybody into their house.
Yeah.
And now it's like, look at our cool new things. And we're all doing all this really awesome stuff. And we have a tournament. Like, everyone's coming to the capital city.
Yeah.
Instead of them parading around.
Yeah. You know, people say they're like, don't throw a party at your own house, but why not? You avoid all the other weird stuff. It's sort of like
the song, Welcome to My House.
See, exactly. You know? Well, see, that energy, that warmth, that sort of open-handedness, how could that be bad? It seems like a really skeptical point of view to be like, don't throw a party at your house. But it's like you can completely control the vibe. There's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. And it worked out so well. And they controlled the vibe. I feel like Jaehaerys and Alysanne ended up being the stars of the show.
For sure,
even though the wedding wasn't about them.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about them arriving to the wedding.
Oh, my God.
And
it's
descending from a bright sky on their dragons, Vermithor and Severwing. their great leathern wings stirring up clouds of sand as they came down side by side to the awe and terror of the great multitudes.
Yeah.
Like, you can only really do that at your house, you know?
Well, they can do it anywhere, I think.
They can, but, you know, the spectacle of it all.
Well, it's like when they arrived, it's one of my favorite quotes ever, and my favorite moment from the last chapter is when they swept off the back of both of their dragons last time to meet the people who were handing them the keys at King's Landing. It was the same energy. They could keep doing that for the rest of their ruling, for the rest of their lives, and I would be... See, I'm not... I actually like these people. I do worship them. That's the thing. I really do. Because, and especially toward the end of the chapter, their energy is so hilarious because everyone else is trying to make them be a certain way, mm-hmm. and they're just like, all right, we have this... And we're patiently just going to do this. I want to say they have a trump card because we're throwing a party that's this massive and that is so specifically about people that some might assume are the de facto actual rulers of the realm and maybe always will be. And if they really are, then doesn't that mean that you as a king kind of don't have any actual say or any actual power? And doesn't that actually... open up the opportunity for people to revolt in some way if they feel like the king isn't powerful. But right. still, even though that's a possibility, it's they're so personally confident that it doesn't even matter. That they only need to show up on the dragons and then it just kind of ends the conversation.
Right. It's like you said, I think it is the trump card. It's such a flex. But it's an important flex. And I feel like Jaehaerys flexes in so many different ways in this chapter. When you think about him pulling together his little small council-ish thing where he's got somebody from everybody in there. He's got a Maegor guy. He's got an Aenys guy to all be part of the combo.
Let me read it. I copied this down. This is the setup for what he's doing. Accordingly, Jaehaerys reached out to the Lord of Claw Isle, Edwell, Celtigar, who had been Hand of the King under Maegor, and recalled him to King's Landing to serve as Lord Treasurer and Master of Coin. For Lord Admiral and Master of Ships, the young king turned to his uncle, Daemon Valerion, Lord of the Tides, Queen Alyssa's brother, and one of the first great lords to abandon Maegor the Cruel. Princess Tully, Lord of Riverrun, I love that name, Princess, was summoned to court to serve as Master of Laws. With him came his redoubtable wife, the Lady Lucinda, far famed for her piety. Command of the City Watch, the largest armed force in King's Landing, the king entrusted to Carl Corbray, Lord of Hartum, who had fought. What's so funny about Carl?
The way you said it was funny.
Well, it's with a Q, so it's not quite as boring as it seems. Who had fought beside Aegon the Uncrowned beneath the God's Eye. Above them all stood Rhaegar Baratheon, Lord of Sword's End, and Hand of the King. It could have been vastly different. Conciliation remained their guiding principle, for the divisions that had so recently torn Westeros apart were far from healed. Rewarding his own loyalists and excluding Maegor's men and the faithful from power would only exacerbate the wounds and give rise to new grievances, the young king reasoned. His mother agreed. So a little bit of telling us rather than showing us in this chapter also.
Sure, but telling us that these are Jaehaerys' decisions.
Yeah.
You know, and I bet we'll get the opportunity to see it in action just because we're going to be spending so much time with him. But this is his decision. His mom agrees. I know she's queen regent, but she's backing him up. He's involved in so many of these meetings. The only meetings he isn't involved in are the meetings about who he's going to marry, basically.
Yeah.
Which is funny for good reason.
He confidently doesn't even ask about it.
Right.
He's like, oh, what are they planning?
Right.
That's so funny. But at the same time, it makes a lot of sense because they can't really make him do anything.
Well, obviously not, especially as we see with the final kind of scenes of the chapter with his powerful Kingsguard who are at his beck and call. But they don't need to make him do what they want necessarily, just because he does have such a, especially coming off of his dad.
Yeah.
He has such a strong vibe. Like, he knows what he wants to do. He seems pretty set. He's got a backbone, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's cool to kind of see us being told these things. And I'm looking forward to watching those decisions and see how those decisions play out, because right now it seems untouchable. And with his sister slash wife, his sister wife, when
it rolls off your tongue so easily.
I know, it really does. It's my destiny. But when he's like, Aegon didn't have secrets from his sisters, so mm-hmm. I don't have secrets from her.
Yeah.
Just like really setting up this standard of, I'm cleaning house and I'm going to do it right, and yeah. everyone's going to have a really good time, and I promise I'm going to make good decisions, but let me make the decisions.
Yeah, without even forcing anyone to hear him say, let me make the decisions, he just does it. Mm-hmm. There's no, at least in this, there's no hard conversation between him and Rhaegar where he's like, listen, man, you need to ease up for a second.
Right.
He lets him have the big wedding. He lets him do the whole thing.
Right. He lets people talk his ear off and complain and just like, he's the rebound board.
Yeah, but that's so useful. Like, that was such
a
great way to interface with those folks. And on top of that, I thought that George did a great job of sort of justifying. I'm not actually skeptical of him. I was at first because it seemed like he was getting all of this sort of built-in, not necessarily praise, but just a very convenient device for the story to be like, okay, you had Maegor, and now here comes this guy. And then his sister's also just as great, and they're going to do mm-hmm. such wonderful things. And I felt like, okay, this was like the obvious conclusion to that part of the story. So maybe it felt a little bit too obvious to me.
Right.
But with more of this context, like, for example, the texture of lords across Westeros seeing him in a different way, but them all having the same kind of meeting. Some of them thought that he was contemplative, and because of that, he was respectable. Some of it thought he was cold and calculating. And so for me, that helped me feel like he was more of a believable character. And also right. knowing more, and because the context is way more fleshed out in this chapter versus the last one, knowing more about his actual relationship with his mom and with Rhaegar, I think does a lot to show that his rule is not as straightforward as it seemed, and that he actually does have like really, really big obstacles to climb over. Not just with the faith, and not just with the possibility of the poor fellows revolting again if he makes bad decisions or if they get bored again, but the fact that his Hand of the King low-key thinks that he's basically the king, sort of.
Right.
And that he has all this ancient blood. I was going to just put my phone down. Let me see if I can find this note, but I want to give this context that George feeds for Rhaegar, which also I think gives us, I know this gives me and gives us a lot more stuff to go off of when we think of someone like Robert or Renly or Stannis down the line. Blue-eyed and black-bearded and muscled like a bull, Lord Rhaegar was the hottest of five brothers. No, sorry. Lord Rhaegar was the eldest of five brothers, all grandsons of Orys Onehand, the first Baratheon lord of Storm's End. Orys had been the bastard brother to Aegon the Conqueror, and his most trusted commander. So, bastard brother to Aegon. After slaying Argilac the Arrogant, you guys remember that from all the way back in our first chapter? Last of the Durrandon. He had taken Argilac's daughter to wife. Lord Rhaegar thus claimed that both the blood of the dragon and that of the Storm Kings of old flowed in his veins. And those are the guys that are going to be in charge of Storm's End and the Stormlands for the rest of Westerosi mm-hmm. history. Up until the point that we're reading in the chapter. So that's the guy that he's against.
But not really against, but that's the guy he has.
Yeah, I guess not against. You're right.
I don't think we really saw them.
His mom.
Yeah, he's married to his mom. And I don't think we ever really saw them. I mean, I think that obviously, never mind. But we saw a really big disagreement with them at the end. I mean, they're literally like head to head. But other than that, I feel like people really like this guy. And Jaehaerys seems to take his opinions pretty seriously until he wants to make the final say. But
at this point in Fire and Blood, I'm curious as to what Lord Rhaegar's thirst will be sated with. Hmm. Will it be enough, this golden wedding? All of this FaceTime with the who's who of everyone that's alive, basically, right now. The acknowledgement that he's the one that's partially and largely responsible for this happening. He didn't get to be a Kingslayer. He got to be a Kingmaker. And Jaehaerys has his own idea of how he wants to do things. So at this point, I'm asking, well, what is this going to lead to then? Like, right. Him saying that you can or cannot marry someone in a specific way, is it because he's really against the union because he's afraid of the consequences from the faith? Or is it because, like, Rhaena's wedding to Andrew Farman, is it because he did it without asking? That's what I'm curious about. And if that's the case, then what is he? Is it really just power that he's annoyed about, or at least seemingly being disrespected in some way? Because he was pissed, more pissed than the mom, more pissed than Alyssa was at being. She was offended because she was left out of her daughter's wedding. Like that sucks. Yeah. But this guy was just mad because he wasn't asked. Basically, the crown wasn't counseled, and that basically being him.
Well, because they wouldn't have, he would have wanted to make a better political move because there was no politics involved.
Yeah, but
at least from his perspective,
the political move that he wanted to make was marrying her to someone in his family.
True,
just to continue to shore up his connection, the ability to, if things began to unwind, for him to be in the position to be the person it unwinds for.
Fair, yeah.
Continually. So I'm like, where does it end with this guy?
I was going to make a joke about how he seems to be satisfied pretty quickly.
I love that you're that like, that's hardcore. That's good. That's powerful. That's powerful. I'm with you, but heck yeah, dude.
it's just what stood out for me. But he's definitely a guy to keep your eye on.
For sure.
He's married to the Queen Regent.
Yeah.
Do you think, though, that we have PTSD from what a queen regent is really supposed to be, you know, and what that transition actually looks like?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But I think that we're in that fugue of everyone just being grateful that there's not bloody battles happening in the middle of the city, that it's a wedding that we're all celebrating. And that's
just fake battles.
Yeah, the sea battles, fake. It is just pageantry. And everyone, all the people that are coming to fight, there's people that are coming to fight, hedge knights, random knights of lesser houses, some of greater houses. I think there's probably a couple lords sprinkled in. Like, folks are looking for opportunity. So it's not just pageantry and entertainment. There's also so much opportunity. Opportunity for a rise in nobility, opportunity to make money, opportunity to get gossip, opportunity for state-ran information to be casually given to you.
It's the ultimate networking event.
Yeah, exactly. I want to give a little bit more context because I found this quote in here. When Jaehaerys was entertaining folks, it wasn't his solar, and he only had one member of his King's Guard, Sir Giles, and a maester, and a few servants. So this was like, I want to see a painting of that situation, because it seems like
right.
I'm imagining some wine and almost like a horn of plenty with some fruit spilling out of it, and that's the setup. Like, that's the new king.
It feels really intimate, and like, it's kind of makes me think about what you were saying last chapter of, who is this guy? Like, why does he have to have all this pageantry about him? So were all the great lords of Westeros, basically. Like, who is this guy? And so instead of, like, having to come up to him and state their grievances in this big, loud, echoey hall where he's sitting high above them on a throne.
Yeah.
They can just sit across from each other, person to person, and say, what's up? So they, you know, let me test me and try me so that down the road, loyalty to me makes sense because you've had a conversation with me eye to eye.
And the decision that he made to take jousting out of the tournament was so good. And it seemed like a turning point for me in the sort of like old school idea of, I've always been a little bit confused by that whenever they did. Like, I just watched The Last Duel, and the first heat of The Last Duel is that they try to unhorse each other before they start sword fighting. It's just like, well, what is that? And it's like he said, he was like, you know, they're not going to be fighting from their horses three quarters of the time. A lot of time it's going to be people coming from the side of the room or... I was going to say riding somewhere, so I guess that point's not really good. But Jaehaerys, I think, was right in saying, let's have a real tournament where people are actually fighting each other. I love that.
So raw.
So raw, and also just made a way more likely opportunity for people to really show who they are. The war,
and he obviously got some
cloaks.
Good guys out of it, so yeah. It worked.
Yeah, the eldest champion was a grizzled hedge knight named Sam Good of Sour Hill. I love this dude. A scarred and battered man of 63. That is an old guy. That is an old guy for the time that we're in. And as far as they are in their medical technology, come on. Who claimed to have fought in 100 battles, and never you mind on what side. That's for me and the gods to know. One eye bold and almost toothless.
I love that energy.
The knight called Sour Sam looked as gaunt as a fence post, but in battle he displayed the quickness of a man half his age and vicious skill honed through long decades of battles, great and small. It's Duskwood.
Oh, okay. Okay. That makes sense why Duskendale is so close. Yeah. Okay.
Thunder Mystery Knight, not only is the Serpent Scarlet, also had a great following. When finally defeated and unmasked, he proved to be a woman. Jonquil Dark, a bastard daughter of the Lord of Duskendale. Not even a true-born daughter, okay? Jonquil Dark. Dark. We know how she was dressed. It's like,
a Brienne vibe. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're imagining her as like as stout as Brienne.
Well, that's not how she's described at all.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. It's slender.
But,
slender.
I guess just more of like a Brienne energy.
Yeah. I just feel like he keeps reusing it. I think that's the thing that made me feel sarcastic toward it. Sorry to everyone
who thinks that's rude. I think that that's true, but I think that's why Fire and Blood is interesting. And history repeats itself. And so kind of reusing, I mean, how many times have we had conversations with Leech on this podcast about all the things and ideas and characters that he's reusing in his other stories aren't even about A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
And so if it ain't broke, why fix it?
Speaking of, I've been kind of soft on calling the weddings colors. I knew the red wedding was the red wedding because of what happened, the blood and the wine. It made a lot of sense to me. I felt like we were all kind of pushing it with the purple wedding. But after now knowing that this is the golden wedding, it's like, okay, I'm in.
You don't like it? Oh,
no,
you're
I,
in?
Okay. No, I like it. Yeah. I'm 100% in. Yeah.
You love a good theme. I wonder what color Jaehaerys and Alysanne's wedding was.
Fleshy, flesh colored. So this is what Rhaegar wanted him to do. Lord Rhaegar, who was known to harbor thoughts of extending the power of the Iron Throne across the narrow sea to Essos, put forward the notion of forging an alliance with Tyrosh by wedding Jaehaerys to the Arkin's daughter, a comely girl of 15 years who had charmed all at the wedding with her wit, her flirtatious manner, and her blue-green hair.
Oh.
Yeah.
And the Grand Maester also wanted something else, too.
Probably a Hightower. I forget.
A Tyrell.
Oh, yeah.
The Grand Maester wanted a Tyrell, a Hightower, or an Arryn.
Mm-hmm.
A Tyroshi is what his... No, stepdad wanted.
Rogard's his stepdad.
Yeah, isn't that funny? One of the different houses. Who, whatever. Oh, a Vance, a Colbrey, a Westerling, or a Piper.
Mm-hmm.
Loyalty. So, like, all of them have this idea of loyalty, but they just can't decide on who. And then you hear it says, other conciliators felt emboldened to put forward candidates of their own because they were so divided.
Right. And there was the option, of course, of not being so... obvious and rewarding people who are loyal to them and like the good Targaryens whenever Maegor was doing his things, but to sort of do the unknown thing and Maegor's bride, who was the most fertile, for example. But none of those options were good. Plain and simple. And we knew from the start that it was going to be Alysanne. So
Well, that's what they were expecting, yeah, too.
They always knew that, too.
I understand, though, especially, and it talks about this a lot in this chapter, Alyssa's perspective.
Yeah.
Of course she's not going to want her kids to get married, just because it's been such a disaster this whole time.
Yeah. It's what pretty much led to all of this. It's like, let's just repeat history in the same exact way.
So, of course, you're going to push back so hard on that. But yeah. The way this whole scene plays out is maybe one of my favorite little vignettes in all of A Song of Ice and Fire, because it is too rash and teenage-like and powerful and also fun and magical. I really enjoyed Jaehaerys and LSN. I want to read some of the parts leading up to it. And so word gets out, basically, that the two of them aren't going to marry each other, and that LSN is supposed to marry somebody else.
Daemon Valerion.
And it says, no record survives of what LSN Targaryen said or thought when first she learned that she would be wed to a youth 10 years her senior, gross, whom she scarcely knew, and if rumor can be believed, did not like. We only know what she did. Another girl might have wept or raged or run pleading to her mother. In many a sad song, maidens forced to wed against their will throw themselves from tall towers to their deaths.
Drama.
Princess Alysanne did none of these things. Instead, she went directly to Jaehaerys. Da, 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 da. That night, under the cover of darkness, King Jaehaerys and Prince Alysanne mounted their dragons, Vermithor and Silverwing, and departed the Red Keep for the ancient Targaryen citadel below Dragon Mount. Reportedly, the first words the young king spoke upon landing were, I have need of a septon. His king's guard is following them there under the cover of darkness. They'll be there in a couple of days. The two young, soon-to-be lovers land there. I have need of a septon.
I have need of a septon. Septon Osric's like, oh, I know how to do this.
Yeah. I've been waiting for this one.
Yes. My favorite moment of them getting married. The seven knights of the King's Guard stood witness to the union, their white cloaks snapping in the wind. Yes. Yes. And it is the guys that we've roused up from the Golden Wedding, from all of that.
Right.
And
who are the ones?
Yeah. And we're here, we're so far away. They came later. They couldn't fly on the dragons, obviously. So they came and they had a long ship ride, and they're probably wondering what everything was going to eventually lead to. And it led to this, them standing sort of somberly, but I guess with a good vibe. But at the same time, it's like their marriage was happy, but you can't compare it to Rhaena's, because it had a weird vibe too, but for a different reason. You can't compare it to Rhaegar and Alyssa's. To be honest, it had a weird vibe too, but seemingly bountiful and amazing. But this one is like the happiest one, and the one that they feel the most personally sure about and excited about. And they have to be ashamed of it.
Because they're so young.
They're so young. And their brother and sister.
Right.
And no one wants them to do this. And it's not just because of the way that the septons might react, which is the thing that's so fascinating to me. It's like more texture that makes the situation, like I said, less cartoonish seeming and more believable. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot at once. Instead of it being a point of view that, or point of views that are a story that's spread across a bunch of point of views, we're getting told that. So I'm going to have to lessen some of my skepticism for this. But it's those scenes like this that I think really give it all of that color that I like so much.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's really raw and real.
But they were gonna be allowed to do it though with Mr. Lickspittle. I think he would have pretty much agreed with whatever they wanted.
No way. Yeah, but they spent too long debating and discussing and arguing about it. You know.
But they didn't talk to anyone though. The other people did. That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's so cool about them, is because they don't actually get involved in that stuff.
They just make the decision. They make it happen.
The second
and they do it together.
Exactly. And she went and talked to him whenever she heard the news about the potential match with Valerian. And they, I mean, for the context of what we were told, they basically just got on their dragons and flew to Dragonstone. Which
I think
is
it's
the
so
shit.
Great. It's such a great, the just them talking about the foundation of their relationship. And so they spend all this time on Dragonstone. I can't remember. I think it's like another year while Jaehaerys is still too young to actually be the king.
Yeah, he's got to reach that point where the regency like passes over.
Yeah, they talk a lot about what that year was like. A year and a half, it says. That's something else. A year and a half would pass before Jaehaerys and Alysanne would finally join as man and woman.
Oh, yeah, something else.
A year, a year that they spent on Dragonstone, just doing everything together and learning and...
You got to read that quote.
I'm trying to find the specific
one. She was
one.
Like, for we still have much to learn.
Right. What a Hermione vibe is kind of what I got from
the
that.
The long game.
I know.
The long game.
Here it is. It is written that the young king and queen were seldom apart during that time, sharing every meal, talking late into the night. There's the key. Talking late into the night of the green days of their childhood and the challenges ahead, fishing and hawking together. Talking late into the night about green day, fishing and hawking together.
There's the key.
Mingling with the island's small folk in the dockside inns, reading to one another from dusty leather-bound tomes in the castle
dusty
library, taking lessons together from Dragonstone's maesters, for we still have much to learn, Alicent. Praying beside Septon Oswick, they flew together as well, all and around the Dragonmount and oft as far as Driftmark.
If servants' tales may be believed, the king and his new queen slept naked and shared many long and lingering kisses, abed and at table, and yet many other times throughout the day, yet never consummated their union. Another year and a half would pass before Jaehaerys and Alysanne would finally join as man and woman. How did people know that? Maybe they just said
I think they did. No, I think that was a really important thing, because when their mom comes, Rhaegar's like, oh wait, not Rhaegar, what's his name?
Jaehaerys?
No,
Rhaegar.
Rhaegar, sorry. Yeah. Rhaegar was relieved that they hadn't consummated the marriage.
Yeah, he was like, well, it's not official then.
Yeah, exactly.
That's such a funny, weird rule.
So that, it is a big deal. And so, I guess, I don't know what happens. It's like, today's the day, everyone. Or, I don't know.
It's about to be a fish.
Yeah, it seems to be.
There's no one here to cheer us on.
It's better that way, right?
I honestly, I don't know. I can't say from personal experience, but Rhaegar and his bros, that situation in King's Landing sounded interesting. It was yeah, pretty wild.
I don't know why. That was like the one part of the chapter that I couldn't get over.
The fact that he couldn't get through all of the...
Yeah, I just couldn't get over it.
Yeah.
I think that we are getting a very clear picture of who Jaehaerys is, what his style is going to be.
Their style.
What their style is going to be. And this powerful union that's going to finally be this steady hand that the last couple of kings just haven't been able to provide. And so I'm looking forward to seeing Jaehaerys and Alysanne in action. We saw it a little bit in this chapter, but near the end. But as official king.
I mean, a couple who is brother and sister and sleeps naked together. I mean, good luck splitting them up.
And talks about Green Day late into the night.
Late into the night. Good luck, Rhaegar. They shall curse your incest from... This is what Maester Matthias said, which my note app on my computer autocorrected his name to Mattress. And he was described as corpulent, which is George's fancy way to say that he was a very fat person. So Mattress is kind of vowed in this case. They shall curse your incest from the Dornish marches to the wall, and every pious son of the mother and father shall denounce you as the sinners you are. This is the guy who said that he would support them when they were in King's Landing. He was like, yeah, I'll run it up.
Right.
And if I get in charge, don't worry about it. I mean, we're cool now. The Septon's face grew red and swollen as he raved. Bennifer tells us, and spittle sprayed from his lips, Lake Spittle 2.0. But like, how are you going to act like you're mad like that? His face grew red and swollen. How can you blame Jaharis and Alexander for doing what they want when they're surrounded by people that are that fake?
Well, of course, but I know that the people that caused all these problems are mostly gone at this point.
Yeah.
But that was like 99% of the issues stemmed from this brother-sister thing. And
you're right.
Regardless of, even if he's like just putting on a show or posturing or whatever.
Yeah.
Regardless of that, I think that there's got to be some realness in that. It is a risky move. They did it powerfully, but it's a huge risk.
So do you think that the septons in this case are offended truthfully, religiously? Or do you think it's kind of like a Rogar not being told about the potential wedding kind of thing? Or do they just feel really disrespected?
I mean, it's hard to say. I would hope that it's like a religious thing, but probably not.
I have need of a septon. So Rogar and Alyssa show up and they bring, I forget how many hundreds, I didn't take that note, but they brought infantry with them. Jaharis and Alysanne met them inside the castle gates holding hands. It is said that Queen Alyssa wept when she saw them. "You foolish children," she said, "you know not what you've done."
Septon Matthias yelled at them. He prophesied that this abomination, like you were saying, would once more plunge all of Westeros into war. You already said that.
And then this is an own of mine. I'm not saying we need to go there, but this is what Jaehaerys said in response. And this is pretty much the first time he's wilded out like this. "I will accept chastisement from her great." This is a big Paul Atreides last third of Dune energy. Spoiler alert. "I will accept chastisement from her grace, my mother, but not from you. Hold your tongue, fat man. If another word passes your lips, I will have them sewn shut."
Septon Matthias spoke no more.
Oh. And then Rogar.
Lord Rogar was not so easily cowed.
He was
"Tell me
so
true,
cool.
Your grace. Was there a bedding? Did you claim her maidenhead?"
Yeah. And then he told him no, blah, blah, blah. Then this was so cold. He says, "Separate these children gently, if you please. Escort the princess to Sea Dragon Tower and keep her there as Grace shall accompany us back to the Red Keep." Yo. But as his men move forward, the seven knights of Jaehaerys' Kingsguard stepped up and drew their swords. "Come no closer," warned Sir Giles Morrigan. "Any man who lays a hand upon our king and queen shall die today." I'm going to keep reading it. Rogar Baratheon bristled at Sir Samgood's words and answered, "You are seven. I have 50 swords behind me. A word from me, they will cut you to pieces." "They might kill us," replied young Pate the Woodcock, brandishing his spear. "But you will be the first to die, my lord. You have my word upon that."
Wait, you forgot the best part.
What's the best part?
Right before it says, "Have you forgotten I'm the king's hand?" "I, old Sour Sam," answered, "but we're the king's guard, not the hand's guard. And it's the lad who sits the chair, not you."
I don't see a chair. Alyssa says, "I've seen enough death. So have we all. Put up your swords, sirs. What is done, and now we must all needs to live with it. May the gods have mercy on the realm. We shall go in peace. Let no man speak of what happened here today."
And then we go into...
Yeah, this is, I know, your
again,
favorite part.
My own. So I guess I can hold it off, unless we want to do that.
No,
right
just
now.
Yeah, read it.
"Never," his bride affirmed, "send me to the ends of the earth and wed me to the king of Mossavi or the lord of the gray waste. Silverwing will always bring me back to Jaehaerys."
Gosh.
And with that, she raised herself on her toes and lifted her face to the king and kissed her full upon the lips with all looked on.
And "Silverwing
will always bring me back to Jaehaerys."
There's so many notes from culture that I am picking up on this, but I don't have the exact references. "Silverwing will always bring me back to Jaehaerys."
I mean, every rom-com, teenage, coming of age.
Right, but I think some things that might have come from too, and maybe some other touchstones from A Song of Ice and Fire, but so many different things to aggregate into one. I told myself before we recorded this episode, I was like, this was a kind of break in the usual flow from Fire and Blood that we've gotten so far. So I really just wanted to vibe out on this one. I'm laying down on a couch right now. This is the first time I've ever recorded a podcast like this, for I still have much to learn.
were truly vibing. It was a vibe worthy. And this is what, this is the kind of detail that we were hoping for in our first couple of chapters. This is what we wanted. And so. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. There's a note at the end of the chapter that I thought was a bit weird. Or so the confrontation at the gates of Dragontone was set down, or Dragontone. Or so the confrontation at the gates of Dragonstone was set down by Grand Maester Bennifer. So this is an asterisk to kind of serve as a disclaimer about this last string of info we got of how it actually played out between Rogar, Alyssa, Jaehaerys, and Alysanne and everybody else when they arrived at Dragonstone. Who, in this case, George is telling the story through Grand Maester Bennifer, which in the last episode we talked about Bennifer reminding us of Jennifer Blank and Ben Affleck. We both got it wrong.
We did?
Yeah. We both got it wrong. You said Jennifer Aniston. I said Jennifer Garner.
I meant Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, I know you did. So did I.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's so funny. From that day to this, this tale has been a favorite of lovesick maidens and their squires throughout the Seven Kingdoms, rightly so. And many a bard has sung of the valor of the Kingsguard, seven men in white cloaks who face down Athundred. All of these tellings overlook the presence of the castle garrison, however. Such records as have come down to us indicate that 20 archers and as many guardsmen were stationed on Dragonstone at this time, under the command of Sir Meryl Bullock and his sons, Alan and Howard. Where their loyalties lay at this time and what part they might have played in any conflict shall never be known. But to suggest the King's Seven stood alone mayhaps presumes too much. So I think I just answered my own question.
Yeah.
He's just making it seem more realistic.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a little history book. They do the same thing.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't read a lot of those.
They're usually unreadable.
So this makes it a little less starry-eyed because there's a lot of I'm like about to quote Final Fantasy IX. That's way too obscure, so I'm not going to, but there's a lot of that, a big bring my precious back to me kind of energy, the way that they monologue and then the way that their relationship is described, and obviously the tenure that they're there while they wait for Jaehaerys to come of age. And so
I hope it stays just as powerful.
But even with the castle garrison still, it took Alyssa being the one to go, okay. So I guess my suspicion about Rogar at this point in the story gets sated a little bit because he did not insist over his wife's wishes at that time.
They just got married.
Yeah. And they had so much to do. There's still more to do back in Westeros when they get back to King's Landing. And there's that whole gap. There's plenty of time for him to set himself up and his family up for strong positions of power. And can you blame the guy at that point to get that far into the situation and not to try to get his own a little bit?
Get his own?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
And so matters stood in Westeros as the Year of the Three Brides drew to an end and gave way to a new year, the 50th since Aegon's conquest. And probably at this point, the most firm feeling. Because even though Aegon, the OG, did have his own time and there were celebrations, we always had the stuff going on with Dorne. There was always just a little bit of weirdness with Visenya as well. I mean, this 50 years into it might end up being, I'm looking forward to reading about the rest of their reign specifically and not getting
the golden age.
Yeah, this might be it. 50 years in, I guess, is the golden age, which I'm trying to think of.
That's what they talk about it as.
Everything's perfectly balanced. You've got Rogar doing the guy stuff. You've got Alyssa, I mean, in her case, just kind of being the thing that holds it all together. And she suffered so much, and we get a lot of context about her point of view in this chapter about how she saw things unfolding with Maegor and her kids.
Right.
And then we have Alysanne that sort of takes the role of being matronly with the women from Westeros that come with the lords and representatives from highborn people across the land. And then, of course, we talked about how Jaehaerys kind of did something that people weren't expecting by being someone that was more approachable and less haughty, even though he was the one that had been freshly made king. So it all makes sense. Like, it all works out because it seems like there's a balance. Again, like when the three OG Targaryens came to Westeros and their dragons were really powerful. But it's like less violence, more good.
Everybody's just desperado for some semblance of normalcy. They've lived through enough violence. So
I have one more own. Do you have another one?
No, that was mine.
Okay. Lord Keltigar had two unwed daughters and had famously offered Maegor his choice of them. Now he offered the same girls again for Jaehaerys. Lord Baratheon was having none of it. "I have seen your daughters," Rhaegar said to Keltigar. "They have no chins, no teeth, and no sense." Mm-hmm. That's it.
Those are our owns, and now we'll get to yours. First, we have...
Here. Okay. We're sharing a microphone. This is going to be hard.
It's a good time.
I had to re-record because some of you sent in your owns late, but that's okay.
We still love you. First off, we've got Travis Cole at Straight Savage Cole on Twitter who says, "My own for the Year of the Three Brides goes to the Hand of the King, Rhaegar Baratheon, for being a Baratheon through and through. From drinking the royal cellars dry to deflowering four of the seven verges of the finest pleasure houses of Lys and his brothers had gotten him before, exhaustion and drink did him in." My favorite part of the chapter. I think Robert would have applauded that effort.
That's the own that Hannah wanted to read. Now it's my turn. Thanks, Travis Cole. And it's okay to send in your owns late because, you know, if we're in a situation like this where we can fit them in before the episode comes out, it's perfect. But we do ask you to, we usually ask a day or two before you record on social media. If you have owns for these chapters, you can send your own on Twitter. You can email us. You can text us. You can respond to one of our posts on OnlyFans. Or in May's case, you can send us a direct message on Insta. May slid into our DMs on Insta and said, "I just felt compelled to write into you all, ... I got the stomach flu this weekend and all I could hear in my head was Zach and Danny X, Danny 10, reading, 'The more she drank, the more she shat, and the more she shat, the more she drank.' And I can only say George R. R. Martin wrote about this, ... accurately." So, like we said, you can send in your owns late if you want. We'll put it on the latest episode. Own to Danny 10, and I guess to me, because that sucked. Crying laughing face. Stay healthy, y'all.
Sorry, May. I hope you're feeling better.
Thanks, May. We appreciate it.
If you, like Zach said, if you want to send in your owns, you can do that in a couple different ways. You can find us on Instagram, on Facebook by searching for Game of Owns, or you can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com.
If I could read a subject line of one of our latest emails, it says, "The reason why your competitors are destroying you." What? What's wrong with our website? You don't like our SEO optimization? Next on the podcast, a surfeit. No, what was surfeit. It? Surfeit. A surfeit of rulers. Chapter 7, Fire and Blood. And for all you would-be warriors out there that don't know what surfeit means... It is to feed or supply to excess, satiety, or disgust. Rhaegar?
I like excess, Rhaegar? So bring it on. Mm. Fire and Blood rolls on.
I had a good time with this one. It feels weird recording a little bit after, but I still, now that we've pressed record, I feel completely sucked back into the mindset. And like I said, I'm going to stop tweeting about Jaehaerys.
Never.
I'm going to stop tweeting about Jaehaerys with the wrong spelling on purpose. I swear. Yeah. Can't wait to see you on the next podcast, Anna. Thanks for re-recording these owns with me.
We'll see y'all soon.
And we'll see you on the flippity-flop.